Well, good morning. This is Jump In Tucson, and boy, I have a very special person sitting across from me, and we're live and in the studio at KVOI, the only talk show here in the Tucson area. Jump In Tucson is a platform every weekday. We talked regarding we talk community leaders, and we talk about the things that they accomplish. And one of the unique examples of having a community leader is the person that is sitting again right across from me. And good morning, Chris.
Tom, it is a pleasure to be here with you this morning.
Thank you. This is Chris Dodge, and he is the executive director of the Tucson Jazz Festival. I got to know Chris from, I guess it probably was the Rotary Club.
That's right.
Mostly. And, you know, we have a pledge. We call it the four-way test at Rotary. And it basically means that we're very service-minded, community-minded folks. Obviously, polio is the big thing, along with the Microsoft guy that we're trying to eradicate. And we're almost there. COVID didn't help things a little bit for us to meet our goals, but we're almost back again. And but Rotary and the community does so much, especially with literacy, is kind of really what I really am engaged in, a very important part of the Rotary Club here in Tucson. But we do a big car show too, and that's what really helps fund things like we gave a lot to JTED, which was over a couple years, which is really special, because when I grew up, Chris, I had the opportunity to be in metal shop and car shop and wood shop and all the things that my dad wanted me to do. In addition to he wanted me to go to college, but he really wanted a helper around the house.
Uh-huh.
So I got a chance to, and then all of a sudden shop went away. And I think the last shop teacher was back in the late 90s at AmFi, where I in the school district that I'm in. And then JTED came along, and it struggled a little bit. But now, obviously, if you want to learn a trade, and it really is a lot of math involved now with a lot of the trades. And Rotary for 2 years took quite a lot of the proceeds from the car show and help contribute to their new building and now their new wing, which is kind of special, I think, mm-hmm. for our kids and our grandkids that like to pursue a trade. Now, we're going to talk a lot about music today, and that was one of the other things that kind of went away, was music in the school.
Yeah, music is always one of those things. I come from I have a 20-plus year career in teaching music in the schools, as well as many other things I've done. And it's always one of those things that you have to struggle to try to get funded. But I have to tell you, the consequences of that are really harsh when you don't have different exposure and outlets. And I think the biggest misnomer in music and music education is that folks may have their perception that you're trying to teach children how to become professional musicians, and that's not the case at all. It's really opening up the mind to different possibilities and thoughts and ways of being creative and learning skills of working together that are all super important no matter what you do in your life beyond your school age.
Well, I consider my generation had art appreciation classes.
For sure.
And we had literally a full hour around music.
Mm-hmm.
And you learn about the wide variety of music that's out there.
Yeah.
And, of course, we're going to talk jazz today.
For sure.
So that's important. But there's more than one kind of jazz. And your music appreciation, your ability to have actually shared your musical skills with your classmates, because I'm sitting across an excellent piano player. And I want to ask you, are there any other instruments other than the piano that you feel comfortable playing?
Yeah, I have a master's degree in percussion performance.
Wow,
so
that's good.
Any and every percussion instrument I've played. I had a 20-year career as the principal percussionist with the Arizona Opera. So I played lots of that. I can play guitar a little bit. I can play bass, but most of the time these days, most of my artistic output and performing is on the piano.
I hear you more on the piano,
right.
but I also hear your ability in the sense of putting a band together.
For sure.
And that's a series of sounds, but it comes out as one sound. So, and I'm, you know, as you know, I think I've shared with you, I'm a frustrated musician because my parents were very within the means to try to get me to play the guitar, the piano, the organ. And I just couldn't do it. And I don't know whether it was a lack of interest because I was a baseball player and I played Army and I was outside all the time and maybe didn't focus. But nobody in my immediate family other than my son is an artist.
And so what I'm going to say is this.
Yes.
We all intrinsically have music in us, right? We're born with it. We're surrounded by it. And, of course, not everybody can do everything, right? And some people, I think you are more apt to be able to express your art as part of who you are. Some of us express it in writing. Some of it express ourselves in music. Some of us express ourselves in complex mathematical computation and architecture, you name it. There's all sorts of different things. But the arts and music are very much ingrained into all that we do, for sure.
And there is a basis to it, it's communications.
Oh, yeah.
In a different way. And so I went to a liberal arts school, and I went on and to become a marketing, communication, broadcasting, theater graduate of a small college. And the good thing about the small college, you don't have to be the varsity player to get the time, you know, on the field, so to speak. And I don't mean that literally, because 2,000 students, I was able to sit behind the mic.
Uh-huh.
I was able to get and play Hamlet in college, which was, you know, it was a kind of a comedy version, or at least for some reason when I was up there, people laughed at me.
Yeah, you look a little more Hamlet-like these days.
Hope it was the script that they were laughing at, not me playing Hamlet.
Yeah.
But we had workshops during Christmas, and we had work, you know, and so I'm not going home. I'm staying and we put on a play, and then we had to do stagecraft, and then we had to be the lights. And this was all before the digital world. But in order to put six lights on, we had to have a pole and push it at the same time. But I got to know B.B. King a little bit because he came. I was in charge of the backstage area of all of our magicians and things that came into the community, and B.B. King was one of them. Wonderful, just wonderful day we spent with B.B. King and all of his
folks. I assume he performed it.
Absolutely.
As well. Yeah.
Yeah, and quick story, and we got to go to break, is that him and the sound guy came early, and they wanted to do, you know, a rehearsal. And he looked at me, and he goes, so are you the sound, or are you the light guy? And I said, well, I'm here to set your lights. And he goes, I just want to make sure you're funky. I need funky. Now, they didn't teach funky in class, but the lighting guy looked at me, and he goes, you know, I was 18, 19 years old, and he goes, lots of reds and blues. So the entire lighting plot was reds and blues and ambers, and boy, and did I mean, I had a great time. I mean, I had to light Lucille a little bit differently than the rest of the band. Of course, we know who Lucille was, his guitar, right. You know, and then he had a piano player, of course, and but he didn't come on right away. He let his band be the warm-up group. And then he came on to a round of applause. There were about 3,000 people there. So music appreciation does go certainly a lot further than just your ability, or in my case, my lack of ability to play a musical instrument. But we'll talk a little bit about that. But we're here to listen more about what the Jazz Festival is all about. And we'll get more into the details in just a few moments. So this is Jumpin' Tucson. And our special guest today is Chris Dodge. He's the executive director of the Tucson Jazz Festival. And there's some other things he's involved in the community as well. And we'll get around to that as well throughout the hour. So thank you, Chris. And this is Jump in Tucson. Well, we're back. And I'm Tom Moulton. And I am the, I guess you just call it the executive director, because in a sense, Chris and I are the CEOs, really, of our organizations. We're both nonprofit organizations, and it really takes the community to help us put on the show, so to speak. The Tucson Jazz Festival is coming up in January, not too far away. And I had the pleasure of being at the Arizona Theater Company last week, and there were the big announcements of all the different groups and individuals that are going to be here for the 11th anniversary, because they just completed the 10th anniversary of the Tucson Jazz Festival. And so that means it's been going on for 10 years, Chris, and that's pretty pretty kind of neat that it's been going on that long.
Yeah, it's it started as a small idea, and like, let's fill a hole in the Tucson calendar in early January before the gym show happens, where there's, you know, it's high season, right? Great weather.
Yeah.
And but there wasn't a lot going on. And Elliot Glicksman, our board of president emeritus, he got together with like our title sponsor Umberto Lopez with HSL and said, like, hey, can you help us put on this festival? And with our original executive director Yvonne Irvin, who really spearheaded this thing and let it grow. And for me, she created, both of those guys created deep roots that were just ready to for a huge, beautiful thing to flourish. And what I see in the Jazz Festival is it's a little piece of the pie of our greater artistic community, right? And everything that happens in our community is important. All our different festivals, all our different arts organizations, all our different attractions, everything is important. And we just have a little piece of that pie, and we've been doing it pretty well for 10 years, and the festival has expanded exponentially over the last few years, not only with locals attending, but we have a large number of people that find Tucson as a destination, come to Tucson just to be in the Jazz Festival. And while they're here, what do? They go to our restaurants, they go to our different attractions, they go to everything in Tucson and take in the full Tucson experience.
Now, back in the 90s, I had the pleasure of working in New Orleans. And there was this...
You probably didn't hear any jazz music there at all, no.
Right? Well, there was this racetrack a little bit down from downtown.
Yeah.
So I was in the zoo and the aquarium, so I had the pleasure of not only being downtown excitement with the aquarium, but I was also in the local community and the... on Alpha Magazine and help run the marketing at the zoo. But there was this huge festival that I remember had maybe three stages when it started, and then it was like 10 stages, and the variety of jazz musicians and the excitement, because the fairgrounds, pretty big, large area.
It is, yeah. You're referencing the NOLA Jazz Fest,
yes,
and Jazz and Heritage Festival, as
right.
It's called now, because there's more than just jazz music at it, and 12 plus stages around a huge racetrack at the fairgrounds, and several tents, and it's an amazing experience. I've been to it just in the last couple of years, and it's overwhelming the number of people that show up to that, and the different types of music that's going on throughout two weekends.
International festival.
Oh, for sure. Yeah.
And whereas, you know, we do get our fair share of international, certainly from Great Britain and Canada and Mexico, and their music, you know, preferences are probably as broad as they are in the United States. Because jazz is. Just like people got engaged in the Beatle music. What did they call them? Beatle Mania, or I think it was called back then.
Yeah.
You know, I have to tell you, even though it was only 3,000 people that came out to say B.B. King. Now, B.B. King was more of the blues, but blues and jazz have some interconnections.
For sure.
And... I just think that audience enjoyed being there more so than a rock concert. I don't know what it is. What do you think?
I think all types of music have a system of push and play between the audience and the performer. And in classical music, the music set, right? They know the notes, the exact notes they're going to play. The audience can affect that a little bit, but to some degree, not so much. The beautiful thing about what we're talking about here and jazz music, rock and roll can be like this, blues is definitely like this, is that there's an intent when you start the music, and then there's choices that are made. And all those choices, the improvisation, right, the flow of the music, how, where the apex is going to be and where the journey is going to be, the best musicians listen to not only the players in the room, but the people sitting across from them, and they go on that journey together, and they make those choices, and it's just a beautiful, it's a conversation between the audience and the musicians, and it's a wonderful, emotionally driven experience that can drive up different things for different people. For sure.
Do you think that's more prevalent in folks that love jazz music than any other?
No,
or you said
not,
you
not,
saw
not,
it in blues, you'll see that.
Any type of music, right? Like, and this is what I say about like our jazz festival too, because sometimes people are scared of jazz music because like, I don't understand it, or I don't know it, or I don't know what's going on. So what we do at the jazz festival is make sure there's something for everybody. And even if you're a longtime experienced jazz listener, you're going to find great stuff that you're going to love. And if you're a newbie and you've never been to a jazz concert, I encourage folks to come and just check something out, because that conversation and then that experience of hearing live music is special, right? And I'm a proponent, like, you should go see ballet, you should go see classical orchestra, you should go see opera, you should go see jazz, and experience, because all of those experiences are valid, and the jazz experience is a unique experience. And we have a wonderful jazz club here in town, the Century Room, which we present a lot of stuff.
Yes.
I would say if you're a newbie and you haven't come to jazz concerts, come to a Century Room experience, because it's an elevated room that's just beautiful experience to be in the room. And then on top of that, you get to have that intimate experience with an artist right there.
So there is jazz that now year round in Tucson.
In Tucson, for sure.
And I remember going to a smaller jazz evening that Sokka put on, one of the founders, and we were at Lowe's at one time, and everything, and a very intimate setting.
Right.
And we had dinner. Mm-hmm. And then we had, an evening full of jazz. And at that time, I don't believe the Century Room was having jazz. That's relatively recent.
The Century Room has only been in existence for 2 years.
Okay. Yeah. I thought it was new.
Yeah.
And over at Hotel Congress.
It is.
And the community's fully embraced it. And I, from your announcement last week, quite a few of the musicians will be in the Century Room.
Oh, yeah. We have something from January 17th through the January 25th. Every single night, we have something in the Century Room.
And I really, especially you, during your presentation to a group of sponsors and I guess jazz lovers at ATC, you talked about if you hang out just a little bit after the performance, you're going to have something special to listen to.
Yeah, so a beauty of a jazz festival, there's a couple things that happen. One, there's density, meaning that there's a lot going on, right? Mm-hmm. We have a lot of shows going on in different theaters, not only in the jazz clubs, but like places like the Rialto Theater and the Fox Theater downtown and other pop-up venues around downtown area. But and we have musicians playing in restaurants, and we have special food options in restaurants. We have all lots of different things going on. But the other thing is, because there's lots of things going on, there's lots of different musicians all in town at the same time. And these musicians don't always get to see each other, but they love to play together.
Yes.
And we create opportunities for different musicians that, like, from group A and group B and group C, like, they all are in a room together late at night. We have our late night jazz jams. And, you could have you never know who's going to be there, but you also know something magical is going to happen.
So it's very organic.
It's totally organic.
So it's like someone showing up at a concert that admires that band, has mm-hmm. their own band,
right.
And next thing you know, they invite that person up on stage,
right.
and they jam.
Right.
This could go on for a while in the evening after the main show.
It goes on until we have to close the place down, and at night.
4 o'clock.
Yeah.
Well, this is Jump in Tucson, and our guest today is Chris Dodge, the executive director of the Tucson Jazz Festival, and we'll be back. We're going to get a little bit into the beginnings, the mission statement, and the nonprofit side of the Tucson Jazz Festival, and you're going to really appreciate this story. We'll be back in just a few moments. Well, this is Tom Moulton. I think you probably would rather listen to the music than me, because it's really special today, because we're celebrating the Tucson Jazz Festival January 17th through the 25th. Did I say that right?
You did get that right. I like that music you were playing. That was that was Lonnie Hall, and Lonnie Hall is the wife of Herb Albert.
Oh,
and Herb Albert was part at our jazz festival 2 years ago.
Well, I have a Herb story real quick. So I belong to a professional tourism organization called SKAL, SKAL. It's an international. I was part of the leadership there for a long, long time. And I got invited to the Hollywood Bowl. Mm-hmm. And lo and behold, Herb was performing.
Yeah.
He's
amazing. Oh, he's wonderful.
I mean, this guy.
He puts on a great show.
Oh, it was a great show.
Yeah, he sold out here in Tucson.
Putting on the Ritz was his hit at that time, which was an old song.
Yeah.
But he did he put on the video with no audio. Mm-hmm. And his band played the music track for the video mm-hmm. live.
Yeah.
Okay. And I mean, generally, I don't know if I'm like some other people, but if I like something, I get goosebumps. I'm getting goosebumps right now thinking of my experience at the Hollywood Bowl. And we got a chance to, they have a little greenhouse where, over there, and we got a chance to meet him and some of the band members afterwards because of some of the folks that were in Los Angeles Skull. And just what a great man. Oh,
he's a genuine, authentic, nice.
And he's
nice
been performing
person.
For 40 years, maybe now, or a long
time. 60 years.
60 years. And boy, and he still can play. There's no lack of oxygen coming out of his lips there playing. Of course, his band is probably extremely seasoned with him, but I had not seen him since, the early days. And watching him do that video, the audio live with the band, it just set the Hollywood Bowl fits, but it was just absolutely packed. And you've been there, right? And
the
way it's leveled.
Oh yeah, it's like 18,000 of your closest friends. But but you had that experience I was talking about earlier, where you had a moving live music experience.
Yes.
Where an artist on stage is talking to you. Right, through his method of communication, which is his music, and it touched you, put goosebumps on you, right?
It was in the theme park industry, we develop live shows maybe for all the right reasons and wrong reasons, because we didn't have the capacity to feed everybody at noon. So we decided that our shows would start at 11 o'clock and they would end about 2. So our capacity of the rides and the in the restaurants in particular, but there were some musical directors that the large parks hired, and we just had, and there was a fellow. Oh, I wish I Mark Wilson was our audience guy, which he was a magic guy, and then there was another gentleman, I can't remember his name, but he worked for Warner Brothers, and that was in charge of the artistic portion of our musicals, and we started with live music, and then we went to tape, and then some of the parks like Fiesta Texas went back to live music, and no comparison. I mean, there was one guy that excelled in brass. So his live tracks were probably better than all the other tracks I've ever heard. But there is absolutely nothing like having live music for a musical at a theme park. And because every audience, the show's different for every audience. Sure. And while they may be playing the same notes, the intensity, the delivery, the eye contact, whatever it may be, that causes those shows to be a little bit different depending on the reaction from the audience.
Well, it's a human thing,
yes.
Right? We talk a lot about AI these days and robots and whatnot, and while there's efficacy to that whole technology, there's some things that can never be replaced by humans, right?
Yes.
Two people talking across the table from each other, you're not going to have the same kind of interaction without, or if you were just taped over there and I was just responding to taped questions.
Yeah, by the way, this show is live.
No, I meant like if I was just talking to like a robot over there that had pre-programmed everything, that would be weird, right?
Well, yeah. Luckily, music's
the same way, right? It's just weird.
I hope you and I will never get that opportunity because we would probably say no.
No, I wouldn't want to do that. Yeah.
And that's why this show, we don't prepare questions and send them out in advance. We try to do our best to have a conversation. And some of the folks like to do two or three folks during the hour. And we have established there may be one or two people from the same organization, but we like to talk about the same organization. And I promised our guests that we would talk a little bit because I heard you say this, maybe not word for word, at this, again, kickoff of the lineup about why did the Jazz Festival organization start? And, if I was a robot, I probably would say, so can you tell us, Chris, what your mission statement is? But I don't want you to, like, you're looking at it as if you were looking at the website. The way you described what the Tucson Jazz Festival is about, can you recall? I'm sure you can recall because you probably have said it 20 times, 30 times, you know, but why the Tucson Jazz Festival? Now, you've touched on some of that.
I have, but I think what you're alluding to, and this is something that I can talk authentically about,
yes.
is music is one of the few things in our life and our world that brings people together. And it doesn't matter where you come from, where you stand, your socioeconomic background, the color of your skin, where you grew up or where you live. The music is like we all come into a room together and we're unified, right? The music brings us together. And then we as a unit, as a community, are in that conversation with the artists on stage and we're engaging. And in many ways, you know, and you could think of it as like breaking down barriers and whatnot, right? I truly believe we're all way closer of similar to each other than what maybe the world wants us to believe, right? And not that music can cure everything in the world, because it can't, but at the same time, it can soften and it brings a community together, right? And not only our own community, but it'll bring people to our community from different places as a festival does. And imagine this, you know, you have people from Chicago and New York and Los Angeles and Denver and Phoenix and like, oh, no, not those crazy Phoenix people coming to Tucson. But they all come together and you don't know that they're from anywhere. And you sit in a room and you start talking to somebody like, wow, you came from Toronto, Canada to be here. True story.
Yeah.
And like, what brought you to Tucson? Like, well, it's negative 20 in Toronto right now. And you guys have great music. And now I'm like, and I'm looking at these wonderful restaurants you have downtown and the wonderful experiences, like we're just going to take in Tucson and enjoy it. And I love that fact that that we can do that. We can bring the community together. And part of the festival is that we make sure that we create different things within the festival, so it's accessible to everybody in the community, from free events to obviously ticketed events and different prices of tickets at the ticket.
Yeah, and there's
as well.
Something new where you have some dinners for celebrating our certification as the Tucson City of Gastronomy this year.
So we have a jazz brunch this year in a new venue, the Tucson Grand, and right downtown Tucson next to Johnny Gibson's. It's a beautiful venue, and we're bringing in the greatest jazz drummer from New Orleans, Herlin Riley. You may not have heard of him, but...
Did he play with Pete Fountain ever? Or
He's played with everybody.
Okay.
Everybody. And if he walks down the street in New Orleans... Everybody's going to know who he is. And if you hear him play, what you're doing right now is you're smiling. People can't see this, but Tom is smiling. He has a beautiful smile. And that's what's going to put on your face. Because I want joy to happen, right?
Right.
Like,
right.
Why would you want to come to, especially, you know, and where we are and, like, come to a festival? We want to have artists that bring joy and excitement to you. And Herlin will do that. And you're going to have wonderfully crafted New Orleans food that goes there. And another thing we're doing is we have Chef Janos Wilder coming in and performing with one of our artists, India Owens. She is an amazing bass player. She plays, you may have seen her on TV, she's the bass player for the late night Stephen Colbert show.
Okay.
Yeah, so you see her back there. She used to play with John Batiste. Many folks know who he is. So she was part of his band as well. And she's just got this wonderful band, India Owens and The Cookout. I said, like, oh, you got a band called The Cookout. You should have, like, one of our City of Gastronomy chefs come in with you. So Janos is coming there, and part of the performance will be an interactive thing between a live chef, you know, and cooking on stage as well as
often
music.
A lot of folks' exposure is to the Dixie jazz.
Oh, yeah.
And you have one of the famous Dixieland jazz bands going to be here as well, correct?
Which one are you talking about? Are you talking about a brass band?
Yeah, brass band.
Yeah.
Yes. Along the Dixie?
No, Dixie.
No, it's different. Okay.
Yeah,
Thank you for explaining that to me.
Yeah. That is not Dixie at all.
Okay, that is not Dixie at all. Okay.
Off air, I'll explain the Dixie thing to you a little bit.
But,
The New Breed Brass Band, they are, again, another band out of New Orleans.
Okay.
And they're nominated for a Grammy this last year. And the brass band tradition is one of the early traditions in jazz music, for sure, which its birthplace was in New Orleans. And these guys are great. And they take the tradition of, if you've ever been to New Orleans or other cities, you know, these brass bands will come out, there'll be parades, they'll
right.
be playing.
Absolutely.
That same tradition. They're going to be here. They're going to opening up. Delfeo Marcellus is going to be here with his Uptown Jazz Orchestra. The New Breed Brass Band is also going to play part of our Downtown Jazz Fiesta, which is the free event to our public. So, again, trying to have different opportunities, different things going on within the festival, but also make it accessible so everybody from our community and other communities can come in and enjoy it.
So just, you know, when after I understand the difference between brass band and Dixie, I'll put that on our blog. Because we're learning something new here every day. That's the most important thing. Because, you know, I was kind of more of a blues kind of guy. B.B. King was, one of our markets was Memphis.
Mm-hmm.
So he had a restaurant and a kind of a nightclub in Memphis called Beale Street.
Yeah.
And he was there, you know, quite often. And so we always seemed to put together a business meeting so we could spend an evening and go to Beale Street and eat some of the great food and see B.B. King perform live. I probably see him live at least 5 or 6 times, but obviously the thrill was when I
you got to do lights for him.
Oh yeah,
right?
I mean, you know, and sound.
Yeah.
Of course, back then sound was a little bit less complicated than it is now. I think we had a 12-channel board at that time, but now they're God knows what they are because they're all electronic. But when you see somebody, you sit across. You know, there was a gentleman when we were doing concerts at Old Tucson. We had 8 concerts during the summer, and they were generally, older, 60s, 70s, classic rock. And the day before Eddie Money's concert, he was there 4 times, Ed and I would go to a breakfast restaurant because he loved pancakes. And like Millie's is probably a good example. And he would go in the back in the kitchen in a sense, give him, this is the Eddie Money, you know, and the, you know how he talked, kind of, you know, and you know, I'm the money man. No, I have my money pancakes. I remember him telling everybody, and you get to know these folks that live and breathe and have, you know, they're tremendously talented, and they know. It's just a beautiful thing to get to know these folks, and I've only had that opportunity just with a few now. You know, well, we got a break here, and we'll be back, and we're going to kind of wrap it up in the next session, and we're going to talk, how do you find out more about Jazz Festival? Where do you get your tickets? And because some of them are going to, well, a lot of them, I think, right, are going to sell out this year that we believe on.
80% of our shows sold out
last
year.
So we're going to, yeah. You're going to want to get those tickets because they're on sale now. This Jump in Tucson, we'll be right back. Well, I let you hear a little more of this one. And Chris, you recognize this video, didn't you? Tell us about it.
Oh, that's just like a video that I find it's hilarious you guys found it. It's a show I was doing with a guy, Nick Arnold, a Canadian guy. He's, and that's two of us on a piano at the same time, four hands, and then we're running around the piano and playing different parts.
And there you are. You
in all my glory playing.
You were all dressed up.
Well, I mean, I was at a show. Jeez.
Well, was it an? Were you scheduled or was it an improv?
Oh no, it was. What's going on is improv, we intended to do this. Yes, for sure. Yeah.
Well, I wish you guys could see the video, and you know, it's we found it under Showbiz History. So just go ahead and put in Showbiz History, and you'll get to see the crazy rocking piano duel with Nicholas Arnold and Chris Dodge. You know, you are a star, man, and I appreciate it, the opportunity for you to be here and tell us a lot more about the Tucson Jazz Festival, again, coming up on the 11th anniversary. And the 10th anniversary was pretty special, and you had put together a collage of the community's excitement at all those different concerts. The collage that you put up together on the website. You showed it live at the ATC.
Oh, right. Yeah,
and the way you described that was, you know, you captured the images from all the different performances. And now has that made it to the website, or is that just something you use for the presentation?
That's something I use for the presentation.
Okay.
I think my point, and Tom's referencing the presentation that we had last week announcing the festival, is that you could see that those moments, right, and that happen when a live concert happens, not only like what's happening on stage, but like how people react to that. And you can't get that unless you come to it, right? You got to be there in the room where it's happening, right?
Absolutely.
That's the key to it. And you had mentioned before, like, how do you do that? TucsonJazzFestival.org. Yeah, TucsonJazzFestival.org. Everything's up there. And we have more stuff that'll be announced later on in October and November. So just follow us and check out that. We're also on Facebook and on Instagram, all the socials as the Tucson Jazz Fest.
And at this function that we've been talking about, I asked Chris at the end that, so does that mean every once in a while we'll see you on stage?
Yeah, maybe. This festival is not, it's not about, you know, a performance. But I mean, I have the beautiful job of bringing in great artists, and if I get the opportunity to sit and listen to them and be part of the audience, that's my greatest reward.
Well, and boy, what a lineup you've brought, and you can see it all on the TucsonJazzFestival.org, and we had talked about 80% of the shows will sell out. So get your ticket.
Well, no, 100% this year.
Oh, 100. Okay, 100%. All right.
Like, why? Like, you know, let's set a goal and just get there.
Get your tickets now. But there's also opportunities to become a member.
Right.
And in the various membership packages, you get tickets.
Right. You can get discounts on your tickets. It's just become a member.
And just get
involved. And really, guys, if I can just encourage you to do one thing, just go listen to live music. Of course, I want you to come to the Jazz Festival, but any live music is good. Support our local musicians. Support the Jazz Festival when it's here. Or go to your local restaurants and listen. You know, just take in that live music experience. You'll be better, and you'll be happier because you did.
I agree 100%. And we're jumping Tucson, and we've had a great time here with Chris Dodge, the executive director of the Tucson Jazz Festival. You can learn more, as we said, on the website. And we'll be back next Thursday, where we're going to talk a lot about tourism and with some of the folks that really are in charge of downtown.